You've tuned into the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Lee Big.
Aren't you hip to the rap music?
And Michael Costanzo.
The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
Unplanned, unscripted, and slightly unhinged.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
What's up, everybody?
It's time for this week's episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. Folks, it's our job to give you the most interesting bits in the world of sports, entertainment, odd news, and whatever else we happen to stumble across. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right. We bring it to you with our unique sense of humor and wackiness. You never know what you're going to get here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. We do have a couple of topics prepared for you, but that doesn't mean we will go off the beaten path. And go on to other topics. You know, we have the basic game plan, but sometimes you have to adjust in the middle of the game.
Yeah, call an audible.
Yes. You know, something that, the Sixers should do. Not that I'm a little dismayed right now, but, we'll see how the Sixers do, cause they kind of blew the last two games. In their Eastern Conference semifinals, so
yeah,
I'm a little bit down right now.
They've been having a rough go of it recently.
Yeah, and they had a chance to really put this one away, but unfortunately, it doesn't look good. We'll see. Their next game is actually tonight. The podcast comes out Thursday, so if you're listening to this right when it comes out, the next game is tonight. So it's do or die for the Sixers, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're up against the ropes.
Yep.
This is it.
And that's all we're going to talk about the Sixers, because that's all I feel like talking about with
them. It's too depressing otherwise.
Yeah. But maybe, you know, keeping the fingers crossed, maybe they will turn it around, but we'll see. We'll have other sports news to get to in the sports sampler, but before we get to that and all the other news that we want to talk about, we'd like to do a little personal bit, let you know what we've been up to. Mike, how you doing? What's up in Costanzo country?
I'm pretty good. We celebrated my younger cousin's birthday. He turned 2. So it was a rip-roaring good time. I went to see Endgame again, of course. And I got this weird Japanese snack-tasting subscription box thing that I'm really excited to try. I'm like on this subscription box kick thing.
Yeah, you like this sort of thing.
I do like this sort of thing. I have a Marvel subscription box. I have now this Japanese snack tasting kit subscription box. I did the Carnivore Club thing for 1 month, but that was too expensive. But it's fun. You know, you get your little blind box every month. You open it up, and it's like something fun and new and different. And this one is exciting because it's actual snack foods from Japan. You know, like, it's legit. It got shipped from Osaka. It took like a month to get here through customs.
I saw the shipping label and stuff. Yeah, it's all in Japanese.
It's all in Japanese. And then I'm pulling out the items and I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea what any of this is because it's all in Japanese and it's all like weird stuff that you can't find, you know, around here. But this box was really thoughtful. The way it was put together, there's this little guide that tells you all about each item and it's really, really neat. I'm really excited to give them all a shot and try them all out. We tried some seaweed tempura.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, and there was persimmon hard candy, and there was a chocolate covered sesame seed black bean something or other. Like really weird, interesting stuff that you would, you know, obviously you can't find around here. So now I'm looking into other country snack boxes,
and Mike's on the kick.
And I'm like trying to like stop myself from just going through Amazon and being like, yes, I'll take the one from Turkey and I'll take the one from Russia and I'll take the one from Italy and I'll take the one and just buying a box from every country because now it's, I like experiencing those weird cultural things.
Yeah. You get to eat around the world.
Exactly. Well, I've told you before I've had kangaroo and ostrich and
well, we had kangaroo
alligator.
On the
yeah.
Show.
We had kangaroo on the show. Yeah. It's fun, you know, just to try different things. You know, you never know what you're going to find that's weird and wacky out there. That you might not have otherwise known about.
Just like us here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Exactly, right? Always plugging ourselves here. Yeah. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. What have you been up to, Rich?
The thing I would like to mention this week is I caught the first episode of Chernobyl on HBO.
Oh, that's right. That just came out earlier this week. So how was it?
Yeah.
Because I know you were really excited to give it a shot.
I know. It sounds weird. I'm excited for Chernobyl.
Well, I don't think it sounds weird.
But it's a really interesting story, especially with the whole background that it happened in the Soviet Union and Ukraine present day.
Right.
And what I love about the way that HBO has chosen to shoot this docudrama is that they kind of get all the obvious facts immediately out of the way, which I enjoy, you know, because if you just do a Google search on Chernobyl, you know for a fact it's a nuclear power plant. You know it exploded. The core exploded. You know that there's all this radioactivity. You know, one of the people that was trying to warn all the firefighters and the crew and everybody that, you know, this is really dangerous. Proper precautions need to be taken into effect, and nobody was listening to them. Blah, 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 blah. They got all that stuff that you can easily Google out of the way in, like, the first 10 minutes of the first episode.
Smart.
And the rest of the first episode was just devoted to the reaction, the immediate, like, oh, my God, what do we do? There's an explosion, but we don't know what it... The thing that I think a lot of people forget in the retelling of the Chernobyl story is the fact that the energy plant was so large that when the crew heard an explosion, they just thought it was just like a secondary thing just exploded. Nobody ever thought the actual...
That's just a normal run-of-the-mill Wednesday morning explosion.
No, not like that, but I mean like... Nobody ever thought a nuclear core could actually explode.
Okay.
That's never...
It's like unprecedented for them at the time.
That's never happened in the history of nuclear energy. So when they first heard the explosion, they just thought, oh, it was maybe like a coolant tank that exploded or something like that. And the first episode did a really good job of having like all the people that were at ground zero of the explosion be like... You know, oh, you know, something bad happened, but it's not too bad, right? It's, you know, like they did a good job of going through like what the crew went through because, you know, they thought, you know, oh, you know, it was probably just like a coolant, you know, thing blew up. Nobody actually thought the actual nuclear radioactive core went to smithereens.
Right. Like it was like some sort of like piece of machinery that broke down, not the.
Right, not the
big
main
thing. Yeah.
Right, not the main piece of equipment. Yeah.
Okay. So it's interesting. I guess it picks up like immediately after the explosion. Then, like right.
Yeah.
It doesn't waste time building up to it. It just gets right into it.
Yeah. There's not really too much pre-story, if you will. Yeah. It jumps right into the explosion, and that's what I was trying to get at. I love the fact that they didn't try and. Do like some sort of weird like character.
They didn't do like the day of and it goes through everybody's like because that's like such a common thing with a lot of TV shows that do disasters. It's like where was everybody earlier that day and it goes through, you know, Bob went to work and he had Raisin Bran for cereal and they didn't mess around with that.
No.
It was just right into it.
Right. And for it being a miniseries, I thought maybe they would do that for like the first episode.
You figure the first 20% would be that.
No, they purposely got... all of the obvious stuff out of the way.
Okay.
You know,
nice.
That there was a guy that warned about it. He had his moment. Then of course the explosion actually happens. They did a good job of just being like, yes, we're all in the same boat. We all know X, Y, and Z happened. Now let's go into how these people actually reacted to it.
Right. Cause that's the core of it. It seems is like the reaction and the story of, I guess the, stemming of the tide or whatever you want to call it, the disaster relief plan afterwards.
So that was like the first part of it. And the second half was also great too, because it goes over how it's the Soviet Union. They never wanted to admit that one of their proudest, one of their proudest achievements, nuclear energy, could go wrong.
Right.
So you have like the archetype government official that's like, oh, this could not have possibly happened, you know, but it actually that's actually part of the story. The government at the time did not want to admit that there's radioactivity happening.
Right.
So they did a good job of weaving that into the story as well. It was just really shot. It lived up to my expectations, and I can't wait to see where the series goes, because I think they've hit all the notes perfectly for what I was expecting from a HBO Chernobyl docudrama.
There you go. Very high praise for Chernobyl.
Yes. And it is one of those just fascinating history events, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the biggest man-made disasters of all time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's still big. There's still a freaking concrete sarcophagus around the plant.
Yeah, I mean, they can't inhabit that area for, like, I think it's a couple hundred years still.
Yeah, so.
Until it all wears off.
Yep. So, if you're looking for something to watch, I highly recommend the Chernobyl first episode. Only one episode. You're only one episode away.
That's right. I think there's only five total.
Yeah.
So, it's the perfect little short series to jam in there.
Yep. So that's my recommendation. Okay. So with all that in mind, let's go into the first part of the show where we cover sports. It's time for the sports sampler.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports.
In your face.
Sports coming at you in your face in this first part of the show. You ready to tackle it, Mike?
I'm ready.
All right. I have the clock armed. And let's go. What do you have?
All right. This week in the 2-Minute Drill, we have some football news, specifically contract talks. The Dallas Cowboys and quarterback Dak Prescott are reportedly working on a new mega deal to keep the franchise ranch dressing and pasta-eating quarterback with the team for the long term. Early reports indicate that both sides are well into negotiations with a key number floating around. And that number? $30 million per year.
Ouch.
Yeah, they say that the contract could come in around that number. And a contract of that magnitude would make Prescott one of the five highest paid quarterbacks in the league. This would put him in the same company of quarterbacks like Russell Wilson, Big Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan. Rich, too much, too little, just the right amount. Where do we stand on the three little bears of quarterback contract ranking here?
Well, as an Eagles fan, pay him. Go ahead. Pay him as much as he wants. Go ahead. A-okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but personally, I would say that's too much. He hasn't even won one playoff game.
Yeah.
You think he's working miracles or something over there.
To pay him in the same tier as Roethlisberger and Rodgers, that's just insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know they really like him, and I know that they feel that they can do a lot of good with him, and that's great. But the fact of the matter is that he, like you said, he only won you one playoff game, and there's still a lot of question marks about his playing ability and playing style. You know, can he be the pocket passer that they need him to be? Can he, you know, actually go through his reads and progressions? It seems like he fell apart a little bit last year. So, I don't know. But we know how hard it is to find a franchise quarterback. So maybe the Cowboys are just nervous and they're just going to plunk down a whole bunch of money to lock him up long term, regardless.
Yeah, go ahead. Do that.
Sounds like a plan.
Come on, Dallas. Panic, 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 panic. There you go. That's our 2-minute drill.
We all know what happens when teams panic with franchise quarterbacks.
Yes.
You end up paying $100 million to Kirk Cousins.
Woo!
Anyway.
Fantastic.
We're not going to get into that right now. Instead, we got something even more exciting than football, Rich, if you can believe it. We're going to be talking, of course, about horse racing.
Yeah. You know.
Woo-hoo.
This is interesting because I think we only talk about this like once every like 2 years.
And you know what I've always noticed is that we always come down on different sides of whatever discussion we're having about horse racing.
Usually, yeah, the last two times.
So this is going to be interesting when we talk about this.
The last two times we talked about horse racing, we randomly get into like...
It's going to be a heated, violent debate. The table might get broken in half. You know, we're just going to...
Ah!
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, we got to talk about horse racing. Specifically, the Kentucky Derby happened this past weekend. And of course, it wouldn't be horse racing without drama and controversy.
Oh, yeah.
And the Kentucky Derby was no different. It ended in a lot of drama and controversy. The horse Maximum Security won what seemed like by a fair margin. I think it was 1¾ lengths. Everyone, you know, good job. Yay. He was a near favorite. I don't know how people react to horse racing.
Boobies. Boobies.
But there was a Fly in the ointment.
That's right. Plot twist, because...
No, the wind music does not go all the way to the end.
No, it doesn't, because in the middle of their celebration, there was a couple of... What do you call it? A flag on the play? No. A booth review from New York? People complained. Stewards.
That's right. They have stewards instead of officials or referees.
They had to review the win for 22 minutes. Everybody was waiting in anticipation to find out what would happen. Something was under review. People weren't exactly sure. Then they started getting word that maybe Maximum Security, the winning horse, had interfered with the other racers. And so what happens is, at the end of this 22 minutes of review, the stewards of the Kentucky Derby disqualified Maximum Security, the winning horse.
Oh, now you fucked up! You have fucked up now!
That's right.
Yep.
The first time ever in 100-some years of running the Kentucky Derby that the winning horse was disqualified. And what they figured out was that Maximum Security interfered with War of Will, causing him to interfere with Long Range Toddy, who then in turn interfered with Bod Express, who bumped into 65-1 Long Shot Country House, who crossed the finish line second and was therefore named the winner of the Kentucky Derby.
Because you done goofed. And I know who it's coming from because I backtraced it. And I know who's emailing and who's doing it. And you've been reported to the cyber police. Consequences will never be the same.
Well, that was actual audio, yeah. in the stewards room.
Talk about consequences. They pushed Maximum Security from first to 17th.
Yeah, that's a disqualification, yep.
I mean, I can't even imagine going from first to 17th like that.
That's a disqualification.
But this is just totally bizarre that... So, I don't know where you stand on this, but I was watching... I actually watched it in real time. I don't know why, but it just happened to be on.
You stumbled across it.
No, my parents like watching horse racing.
Oh, there you go.
And so they were like, oh, they're running. So, I happened to be wandering by, and I'm like, all right, let me see the race. And I saw him win, and then everything stopped, and they're talking. Did he interfere? And in my mind, I'm going, isn't that part of racing is ensuring that the other people don't get ahead of you? So at first I was a little confused. I was like, interfere? I mean, isn't that the name of the game?
Well,
how did you take it?
So to try and push back on you, the idea is you have to think of it like a track and field meet. The racers are all supposed to be in their single lines.
Yeah, there's lanes.
Yeah, you're supposed to stay to your lane.
They're not actually like drawn on the track, and I learned this later as I watched the 22 minutes of analysis.
Yes, the incredible analysis.
But there are lanes, and apparently what happened was this horse, Maximum Security, drifted from whatever, say it was like lane one all the way to like, it was like four or five.
Yeah,
yeah, like he drifted several lanes. It wasn't like he drifted out of one into the next. He drifted across a few. And you could see the one horse did have to pull up a lot to prevent from crashing into Maximum Security.
Yeah.
Something about it just still doesn't sit right with me. That's racing. That's how it works in NASCAR. I guess it would be the same thing. If it happened in a track and field event, that person would be disqualified.
Yes.
So I guess it makes sense in that regard, but I don't know. Something about it just seems very strange to me.
So are you saying that he deserved the disqualification?
I say that ultimately he deserved it, but it still seems strange.
Okay.
I'm like 50-50.
Yeah,
on
I'm trying
it.
To determine where you land on the
yeah.
on this.
Well, and that's the problem, is I don't know how to feel about it. How do you feel about it? Because I agree in principle, like, yes, he did interfere, but another part of me deep down inside is like, but that's racing, right? Like, I guess I'm looking at them like race cars and not like track and field runners.
Right.
And I guess that's where I'm having the mental block.
The whole purpose of this rule is to protect the horses, because you don't want to have...
They're $1 million investments, and
right.
If a horse trips, they're glue.
Right, yeah, we don't want to see horses die on the track at, you know, right. the Kentucky Derby.
Which I've always thought was a little extreme. I don't know. A horse trips and they're like, oh, gotta kill him.
Yeah.
It does jump
pretty violently.
I know nothing about horses, but it always was shocking me. Like, oh, he broke his leg. We're gonna kill him. Like, what?
Hey, wait, what?
Broke my leg when I was four. If they had put me down, you know, like if I were a horse, they just would have taken me out back.
Poor Mikey.
Poor Mikey broke his leg.
Oh, my God.
But no, we're making light of it. But really, you don't want these poor, magnificent animals to, you know, suffer an injury and then have to be put down. That's horrible. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. They're protecting the animals.
Right. That's the whole purpose of the rule. So here's what I'm gonna say, and this might be contradictory or
you're having a tough time dealing with it too, aren't you?
Yes, but here's what I think it ultimately comes down to. The impact of making that call is monumentous. Like, you're literally mm-hmm. taking the guy who won the race and you have just kicked him out.
Yeah.
He doesn't get any prize money. There's a lot of ramifications for this. Well, he doesn't get prize money from this. He doesn't get any co-sponsorship money from this. Now his main focus now is to try to sue the Kentucky Derby,
right?
And try and get damages from it. But that's
not going to work.
It's not going to work. But he's just going to do it just for show. Now he doesn't want his horse to be in any of the races this year because now he's not. There's no chance of him vying for the Triple Crown,
right?
So it's like this. All of a sudden, like this, like weird cascading effect. From that decision, not to mention the fact that now you've made the second place winner, Country House.
Yeah.
Now they're the winner, and that's just such a huge decision to make. And for me, that's like egregious, you know?
Right.
And
like, and
I don't think
that's the thing. Nothing happened from it. Like, you know, the horse had to pull up, but it's not like...
Right, nobody got, like...
Nobody got injured.
Trampled or
right.
anything. Like, right. There wasn't any sort of danger that I could tell.
Right.
You know? I mean, maybe...
I mean, we're noobs to horse racing.
Right.
So, take everything we're saying with a grain of salt, but to an untrained eye, I'm looking at it, and in the moment, I was like, okay, the horse had to pull up, but how is that any different than, you know, a racer having to, you know, take a little stutter step, or a race car having to brake a little bit. Like there's just this weird mental block there for me.
Yeah. So personally, it was just one of those. I don't know if you can go ahead with that call. I mean, because look at the damage it's doing. A lot of people are saying this is the end of horse racing. A lot of people are saying
Everybody needs, it's not the end of horse racing.
Well, not for gamblers. But I mean in terms of it being like a mainstream kind of a thing, you know?
I do think it's a little weird that they...
this is going to turn away a lot of people.
Well, they basically named the winner. Like,
yeah.
Like it wasn't who won. They were like, well, you're disqualified, so you won. You know, like if the third place person had been disqualified, I guess that's one thing. But this determined the outcome of the entire thing.
Right.
You know, it's just very strange. I don't know. Like I said, I'm torn on. I'm like 50-50. Like, I understand why they did it, and I understand it was probably the right call, but at the end of the day, I'm still, I don't know, something about it just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, that's why I think that you should come to the side of, when you're talking about a huge monumental decision... Basically, you got to think of this like football.
So, what would your option be to not make that call?
I think you got to let that go as a no call. You know, I think that's just part of the experience. You know, like
it's part of the danger of the sport,
right? Like, you know how sometimes, like in football, if it's a one possession game and there's like 5 seconds left on the clock and the offense has the ball at like their own 15. They'll just chuck it up, just not for the sake of a Hail Mary, but just to see if they can draw like a defensive pass interference call.
Right.
You know, and maybe there's some joshing going around, but that referee.
Incidental contact.
That referee has to make sure there better be some freaking egregious pass interference before you throw that flag, because
right.
that changes the course of the entire game.
Right. And I think that's the key, is the word egregious. Did the horse move across a lot of lanes? Yes. But we don't really know if the jockey was like, yeah, let's cut across the entire track, or if it was just in the heat of the moment, incidental contact, like in football type thing.
Yeah.
You know, was it just an accident? Not that it makes it any better or worse, but I feel like when you're handing down egregious penalties like this.
One that takes away the first place standing.
Right, and gives it to somebody else. Yeah.
Winnings, major co-sponsorships.
Yeah. It affects the stud rights of the horse. I mean, think about, like, I was reading an art, does this affect the stud options for Maximum? Like, it's all about screwing, I tell you. It was just hilarious. That's a major part of horse racing, though.
Yeah.
When they win, they put them out the stud. They're like, hey, come have sex with our horse.
Right, right. Well, to the other horses, not to people.
You know, we don't judge here on the podcast, though.
But unless you're from Florida.
Unless you're from Florida. But, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of domino effect repercussions to this decision.
Right.
And to give that type of power to those three, I think it's like three stewards.
Stewards, yeah.
Those three individuals, you know, it's just, I'll tell you what, though, it was the longest booth review I've ever seen.
Yeah.
If they stopped a football game for 22 minutes, Jesus Christ, there'd be riots in the streets.
The Bills fans would jump out into the field and set up tables and do wrestling moves.
They'd drag the refs out in the parking lot and beat them to death.
Yeah.
But yeah, so horse racing controversy.
Yeah.
It's never a simple thing, horse racing. At least once a year, we always talk about it, and it's always some weird, asinine, convoluted BS.
Right.
We agree most of the part on this one, which is weird.
This one we agree on.
One of us needs to say something controversial.
No rules.
I like it.
I want rules.
No, wait. We're supposed to disagree. No, I want there to be all the rules. Rules for everything.
Ew.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But one final little tidbit on this story. Country House will not be racing the Preakness Stakes due to a cough.
Yeah. So as if the decision isn't bad enough, now with this news development that Country House will not be racing in the Preakness Stakes,
Now there's no chance for a Triple Crown winner at all.
So why even bother watching? Unless you have money in this.
Yeah. So does the Preakness Stakes people, they're like, come on. Really?
Yeah.
You just ruined our television ratings.
The Kentucky Derby just screwed over the Preakness Stakes when you think about it.
Yeah, there's no Triple Crown contender.
Yeah. So now there's no mainstream audience. Why should I watch the Preakness?
What's the point?
Yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. This is a really monumental referee decision, and in order for you to do that, there should have been something egregious, something that is like, you know, something that all fans can be like, ooh, that should be called.
And it does seem like people are kind of split on it. It seems like some people are, you know, just like us here, they're like, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess so, but not really. That seems to be the takeaway from what I've seen.
Yeah, but it is kind of an interesting litmus test, because it is like there are people that are coming out saying that this penalty absolutely should not have been called, and then there's other people that are coming out and said, oh, absolutely should have been called.
I think it's crazy. Some people are saying this is the end of horse racing. Leave it to the really old sports to always take everything to the nth degree.
Yeah. It won't be the end of horse racing because gamblers love to do it. But in terms of its
widespread appeal.
In terms of its legacy and ooh, some thunder.
That was thunder.
Oh, we may have to get
away. We're disparaging the good name of horse racing. And the god of thunder is angry with us.
Yeah, does this god like horse racing? Whoops. But yeah, in terms of it being, you know, as kind of like a high cultured affair, I don't know. Maybe it will sink a little bit.
I guess time will tell. I guess we'll revisit this.
Gosh.
I'm having a stroke over here. All the controversy from horse racing. Maybe we'll revisit this when it comes time for the Preakness Stakes and see what people are saying then.
You know what? It'll be interesting to see what rating they get now at the Preakness Stakes.
I'm sure it'll do fine because, like you said, gamblers and horse racing is like peanut butter and jelly. I can't think of a better combination.
Perfect.
But there probably be a television hit.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. So there you go. Yeah. One of the very few times here on the Crispy and Old Podcast, you hear us talk about horse racing, but.
And one of the few times we agree on a horse racing topic.
Yeah. Even more rare.
That's
so
truly bizarre.
This is a special episode of the Crispy and Old Podcast. So, you guys make a note of this. This is some weird stuff. But for right now, that's going to wrap up the sports sampler. But don't go anywhere, because, of course, we still have more show. We've got the entertainment entree and then the non-fortune cookie odd news. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
The Crispy Noodle, always crunching.
I'm Nikolai Volkov. I want you to keep listening to Crispy Noodle. That is order.
The Crispy Noodle Podcast. Did you hear this?
Plans have been greenlit to officially create a full-blown replica of the ill-fated ship, the Titanic.
Bad optics much?
Yeah.
What are they making, like an actual Titanic 2.0, like a new Titanic?
Yes, you're thinking absolutely right.
No.
Spearheaded by Australian mining tycoon Clive Palmer, the shipping company Blue Star Line has announced its plans that they are going to actually build Titanic 2.
Remember that ship that sank and killed thousands of people? We're going to recreate that 2AT. And people are like, wait, what?
Blue Star Line will create an authentic Titanic experience.
Okay. What was the Titanic experience? Dying on a door in the middle of the ocean.
They have also said that there will be enough lifeboats for everyone on board.
You see, you know you're off to a bad start when the legacy of this particular project forces you to say, don't worry, there's going to be enough lifeboats.
I also think it's really weird that this is just one person, like, you know, spearheading this, you know?
Who is this crazy...
He's a mining tycoon from Australia, Clive Palmer.
That's
this is literally just one guy going like, I want to build a Titanic! Here we go!
For some reason, this Australian is from Texas.
He's also, sorry, he's Australian.
Yeehaw! I don't know what country I'm from!
Here's $500 million! Build a boat, see?
That's what he did. He stormed out of his office one day. Boom! Door flies open. Build me a boat! And he just throws money! And people are like,
just,
what?
He's just pelting his assistant. Yeah.
Build me a boat! Build me a boat!
You see this movie? I want this one! Sir, can we get a yacht? No, this one right here on this VHS game.
He's holding up the battered VHS box of Titanic.
I want this one.
That is how I picture this person. Because a sane, rational, normal functioning human being would probably not go this route.
Check out thecrispynoodle.com.
Hey, this is Tony Gaga. You got a podcast? You gotta go to the podcast I go to. I'll get you this podcast for $2. That's the Crispy Noodle Podcast for Tura!
Oh, yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We are done the sports sampler and moving right along into the second part of our show where we go over some movies and TV and pop culture news. Folks, it's time for the entertainment entree.
And now, the latest in movies.
The Simpson guy writes to movies. Dear Die Hard, you rock. Especially when that guy was on the roof.
Music.
I know what that is. That's music.
Video games.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite store on the Citadel.
Celebrities.
You really know Warren Beatty?
Yes, I do. I took a leak next to him once at the Golden Globes.
And more.
You're the all-singing, all-dancing crap of the world.
This is the Entertainment Entree.
The Titanic 2 will be a ship of peace. By learning from the lessons of the past, the spirit of Rose and Jack, Romeo and Juliet, lives in all of us. The spirit of life, the spirit of love, to dream the impossible dream. All of us live in time. This is our moment. It's our turn to board Titanic 2. The Titanic was the ship of dreams. Titanic 2 is the ship where dreams will come true.
Yes!
Wow.
So...
Yeah.
I have to bring back an old story.
Yeah, I saw that bit on John Oliver.
Yep, he mentioned the guy.
I was like, wait, we talked about this.
Yes. People have been tweeting this at us. Yes, this is the same guy. He's apparently running for office in Australia.
Oh, no.
Yes. Oh, nothing's going to stop this guy.
That sounds like a bad idea, Australia.
So that audio you heard was his actual like video preview of what he imagines Titanic 2 will be. Which, by the way, I think is a ripoff off of like some sort of musical, because he was like, to dream the impossible dream. I'm like, isn't this Les Mis?
It might be. I don't know.
I think he watched like a whole bunch of movies, and I think he merged it all into
one. The one line reminds me of The Goonies, where he goes, this is our time.
Yeah.
Our time.
So he watched The Goonies, Titanic, and Les Mis.
And he's like, let's just put them all together.
I want to throw it all together. And of course, I got to play the second part. John Oliver rips into him for his idea.
Now, obviously, that's an incredible idea, coherently expressed. Pure gold, no notes. Except, you know what? I do have a few notes. First, the Titanic as a boat brand is famous for two things, being big and sinking. We already have cruise ships that are five times the size the Titanic was, so that really just leaves the sinking part. Second, I'm not sure how Titanic 2 constitutes learning the lessons of the past when one of those lessons is sitting at the bottom of the North Atlantic. Third, why is one of those lessons of the past Jack and Rose, who are not historical figures, but also neither are Romeo and Juliet, a couple which have about as much to do with the Titanic as the Titanic has to do with Australia. Fourth, their spirits don't live in anyone. Had they lived, they'd be dead, along with everyone else on the Titanic. And fifth, the Titanic 2? That's your name? The Titanic 2. The Titanic already had two identical sister ships, and do you know what they were called? Something a lot better than that.
So,
yeah,
there you go.
Just spot on right there.
Yes.
Hits
John
the nail
Oliver
right
laying
on the
in. Oh, yeah. So there you go. Clive Palmer coming back in the news.
I couldn't believe it. I was watching. I was like, wait a second. Pretty sure we talked about this guy.
Yeah.
So now he's running for politics, too.
Right.
He's running on what? The Titanic 2 platform? Like, what's his thing?
I guess. I don't know. But this is the guy I thought was like a weird Texas oil tycoon, because I was like, build me a boat, see me!
Yeah, I forgot
that he was from Australia. So I'm still hoping, behind like closed doors, behind the front, the facade he puts
he's
on.
He's secretly a Texan?
He's secretly just throwing money at his assistants, being like, I want to do this, see-ha! Woo!
With that accent specifically.
Yes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that is what he's doing, because there's no logic or semblance of logic.
No, not at
to
all.
To anything. Because he's like a businessman, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to build a ship and run for politics. Like, just stick to what you're doing. Why?
Yeah, you're doing good with whatever business things you're doing.
It's like the horse racing. Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Stay in your lane. Yeah. You're a business guy. Don't do the shipbuilding politics thing. Yes. It's weird.
But I had to bring that up because we covered Clive Palmer in the Odd News a couple months ago. So there you go. This is 2019 is the year of Clive Palmer. We keep talking about him every couple of months.
You watch. We're joking, but he's going to win whatever their election is.
Yeah. So keep an eye on that. And Titanic 2. It's coming.
Oh, I can't wait.
But speaking of things based on movies, this is a perfect segue into the part where Mike lets you know what future movies are going to be coming up that you need to keep an eye out for. We call it Mike's This Week in Entertainment. All right, no sound effect.
I patiently wait.
Yeah,
politely just hold off for
there
a
you
second.
Go.
But no, nothing.
No, all right, fantastic,
awesome.
The gods are punishing us, I think, from the horse racing segment.
Yeah, really, they don't like us, or maybe just your iPad.
I don't know. It just didn't fire.
Let's dive right into it, though. This week in entertainment, in movies, Pokemon Detective Pikachu comes to theaters this week. A detective goes missing, prompting his son to investigate what really happened. Joining the investigation is the missing detective's former Pokemon partner, Pikachu, voiced by Ryan Reynolds. The movie blends humor and noir genres with the Pokemon world as the backdrop. So far, critics haven't been too kind to the movie, though, with it only garnering a 50 on Metacritic. But seeing as Pokemon is one of the biggest and best-selling entertainment franchises in the world, expect this to rule the box office when it releases. Go check it out. The trailers look really funny. Critics be damned. Go check it out. Pokemon Detective Pikachu opening this weekend.
Yay!
Yeah, there you go. Finally fired. Yeah,
it works.
Yay!
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, let out a cheer for Pokemon. In TV, we
Yay!
Have... There we go. Everything's on a delay.
Yeah.
In TV...
We're going to be on a 30-second delay.
Oh, God. In TV, The Society is a new Netflix original series premiering this week. This young adult drama features a group of teenagers who find themselves in a Lord of the Flies-type situation. They are mysteriously transported to a replica of their town with no traces of their parents to be found. If you've read Lord of the Flies or have any idea how dystopias work, you'll know that things quickly deteriorate into debauchery, violence, and power struggles. I gotta admit, the trailer looks kind of intriguing, so go check it out. The Society, a new Netflix young adult drama premiering this week. And finally, in video games, a new month equals new free games for Xbox Live, Gold, and PlayStation Plus subscribers. But there's something really cool available for free to all gamers. A brand new feature-length documentary, God of War Raising Kratos, debuts Friday on YouTube. The description of the documentary reads, quote, Raising Kratos documents the five-year Herculean effort to reinvent one of the greatest stories in gaming, God of War. Facing an unknown future, Sony Santa Monica Studio took a massive risk, fundamentally changing their beloved franchise and reestablishing their rightful place in video game history. More than just a making of, this cinematic journey of second chances rooted in family, sacrifice, struggle, and doubt follows game director Corey Barlog and those who chase perfection in art and storytelling. Witness the incredible defeats, the unpredictable outcomes, and the down-to-the-wire tension on full display in this true-life redemption story. I gotta admit, I'm super interested to see what this is all about.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be interesting.
If you've ever heard Corey Barlog talk about the development of God of War, it is... He's a very, very smart guy, and his behind-the-scenes talks about how they went about it are always really interesting. So go check it out. That is God of War Raising Kratos, debuting this Friday on YouTube, free for everyone. And that's what we're looking forward to this week in entertainment.
All right, Mike, thank you for that segment, This Week in Entertainment. You know, there's something else that I actually wanted to talk about. This is perfect because Mike's going to get some music ready. Yeah. So while Mike do that, I'm going to vamp like we did last week.
I got my music ready. So what do you got?
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
okay. Yeah, I'll still mention it anyway.
Go ahead.
I got something really random that I got into recently. It does kind of fall along the lines of this. Have you heard of, I think I might have talked about this once before, but like speed running games on like Twitch and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been addicted to watching, particularly like older games.
Right.
Seeing how these quote unquote speed runner experts try to beat these games.
Right.
And one of them is Super Mario 64, which is a personal favorite of mine.
Oh, you love that one.
Yeah. Cause I grew up on Super Mario 64. That was like one of the games, like you would come home and be like, no, I'm not gonna do homework. I need to figure out how to beat this level, you know. And for those that don't know how Super Mario 64 works, there's like 14 different levels, 14 different like courses.
Okay.
And in each course, there's six stars to try and find, and then another star where you earn the star if you collect 100 coins in those levels.
Okay.
So each
Lots
level,
of collectibles.
Right? So each level, there's seven potential stars,
right,
that you can find, and then there's like another like 12 or so stars hidden throughout the main castle where you select, where you select the level that you're going to,
okay,
which is Peach's Castle, the princess.
Right.
Altogether, there's 120 stars.
Okay.
If you find 120 stars, that's 100% of the game. You completed the entire game.
Right.
You don't have to, because I think to beat Bowser, you need it 70 or something. So you
but if you want to do it 100%,
right? If
do
you want
everything possible,
right? If you want to be a completionist, which I think you are, Mike.
Oh, I am.
Yeah. So this would be you would have to get 120 stars.
Oh boy.
So there are these speedrunners that do 70 star playthroughs, then 120 star playthroughs. They try and get every single star. It's crazy how fast they go. But now the latest thing in the Super Mario 64 world is this phenomenon where someone hacked into the game design element. And now, instead of the player choosing what level they're going to play first,
right,
they get a random level thrown at them.
Oh.
And it is, I don't know why, I am fascinated with this, because you have this whole segment of these speed gamers. They have, like, nitpicked every single nook and cranny of Super Mario 64, and they can tell you, oh, you have to use the bridge, that's 2 seconds faster than going that way, and oh, you have to use the Japanese version because the frames are 3 seconds faster than the American version. They're ridiculous. I'm telling you, it's beyond belief the calculations that go into these speed runs.
Wow.
And now this randomizer fad has hit, and now people want to see these speed gamers try and tackle the randomizers.
Right, because that probably throws everything off.
Yes.
Right?
It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, because they probably have like a set like path that they take through things.
Right.
But because it's random, they have to react on the fly. They can't go back to that like muscle memory.
Right. So it's been like my new hobby. That's what I've been binging on YouTube recently, has just been these randomizer speed runs. Because you get these expert speed runners that think they're all hot stuff. Yeah. And now they're not, because now they're right. Now the strategy has gone out the window.
Right. They go from like the best to just like, I guess, above average, because
they're still good.
Game. They're still good. Yeah. Maybe not above average. Probably much, much better than above average.
Yeah. They're still good, and they still know how to, you know, do certain things that are quicker than others and stuff.
Right.
And it's really just intense, some of the weird things they come up with. But it's interesting that now there's been this like new monkey wrench that's been thrown into this arena of speed running.
Yeah,
so that's been my new addiction.
That's really cool. That is like a very interesting subgenre of the gaming community.
Yeah.
Is the speed running community?
Yeah, because it's not just Super Mario 64.
Oh, it's
they
you
do
can
it for
speed
any
run,
game.
Yeah, you can speed run any game.
Yeah,
that runs completely counter to how I play games.
Yeah.
Because when I play games, I walk into a room in a game and I go, all right, let's check this corner and that corner and that corner and that corner. Okay, next room, check this corner and
right.
that corner. You know, I'm very meticulous. I like to comb through the environment and try to find everything that I can and experience everything that I can. So that is like antithesis
yeah.
to how I play. But since you love watching the speed running, do you ever think you'd try one?
No.
Because
I'm not fast, naturally. I'm not.
Oh.
I like to take my time. I'm with you.
Yeah,
you're
search the nook and cranny.
I
type.
Like to enjoy the game. I like to enjoy the story. I don't try and blast through it.
Yeah,
but it is cool to see these guys. They develop these just intense strategies on
yeah.
how you beat the levels the fastest.
And they do things really weird. Like if you watch some of the old games, like the old Super Mario's, like they'll like jump backwards and stuff because it's faster. You can jump higher. Like it's
yeah.
like weird stuff. It's the things they come up with, the trial and error. They must have had to do to find out, you know, that
yeah, how it all
doing
works.
Jumps certain ways are faster than other ways. I just can't fathom that.
Yeah. So that's been my new addiction, has been watching these speedrunners, but now particularly the randomizer in Super Mario 64, because it's just great to see these guys get thrown off their high horse, because now their strategies go out the window if they get the wrong level.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty cool. And it's a little interesting subsect of the gaming community. And it's all like now it's like a independent governing body.
What?
Yeah. Like they have to, in order for something to count as like a world record,
right.
It has to be recorded live on Twitch or one of the streaming centers. There has to be an audio cue from the beginning of the file to the end of the game.
Okay.
That matches.
That makes sense.
Because sometimes frames fall out when you're streaming the games.
Right.
So to prevent any sort of
trickery.
Splicing,
yeah.
you know, fake footage or anything like that, there's certain audio cues that have to be met. Like it's like a legit, it's almost like a weird like Olympic governing body of video games. It's weird.
Well, being part of the video game community, Rich, we know people take that stuff seriously.
They do.
You go on message boards and websites, you know it's no laughing matter video games to people.
So,
yeah.
I thought that was just interesting. I just wanted to bring that up at some point. But hopefully that buys you enough time to get the music ready.
I have some music, and I got to kick this off first with this little jingle, because we have an entire entertainment entree of Disney news.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, let's lay it on. Lay it on to Disney.
But, of course, the really big news is not just any Disney news. It's Avengers news. That's right.
Yeah.
We have an update for Endgame Watch. We're talking about Endgame screaming up the box office highest grossing list. Avengers Endgame, after this past weekend, became the second highest grossing film all time, raking in $2.2 billion through
billion.
Two weekends. Yes. Makes it the fifth movie to break the $2 billion mark. It now just needs $600 million to surpass Avatar's $2.8 billion. What do you think, Rich? Do you think they can do it?
I think they can. And I hope so, because I'm with you. It's a shame that Avatar is somehow still in the record books as the highest grossing movie.
Yeah, it's not really. I mean, I don't know. It's fine. It's good.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I would say more on the good side of fine. It's like a 7.5. It's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right. But Endgame definitely deserves to surpass Avatar. And I think it can.
If it's already up to $2.2 billion, it's not that far away.
Yeah, and I mean, it is going to be facing some stiff competition from Detective Pikachu. But, I mean, $600 million. I mean, they can do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be in theaters another easily 3-4 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So, they've got plenty of time.
Yeah, I think they'll break it.
I mean, they're breaking every record so far. Biggest domestic opening, biggest overseas opening. If there's a box office record, they are breaking it. It's now also the first non-James Cameron film to surpass Titanic.
Yeah, James Cameron.
Which is really exciting for me because I didn't think Titanic was all that great. Two movies at the top that don't deserve to be there.
Now that you're wrong. It's got
you probably like Titanic more than Endgame, don't you?
Oh.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
If I had to choose between Titanic or Endgame head to head.
Yeah. It's not a question. It's not a question, Rich. Mute your mic right now.
I don't know, man.
Are you kidding me?
Titanic is great.
Yo.
It really is.
This is the argument we didn't have about horse racing.
Right, it's coming out
to happen right now. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but Endgame.
It's close. I'll give you that.
It's that close for you?
Yeah. Titanic is really a great movie. It really is.
It's okay.
I really like the whole historical thing. I think it's one of the few romance movies that actually is like a great story for all, for everybody. I don't know. I think it really plays well into the hands of people who love romance, people who love action, people who love horror, because it is a ship sinking. It's one of those movies that has like a lot of different threads that you can, you know, that you can latch on. So it's close. Yeah, that's tough. I say it's tough.
I didn't realize it was going to be that close for you.
Yeah,
there you go. Titanic. Wow. That blows me away.
I think it's a really great movie.
All right. Well, you like Titanic, but I think there's one franchise that you enjoy a little bit more than Titanic. And speaking of Disney's moneymakers, we have to talk about this. Disney updated their release schedule for their upcoming films recently, and boyo, is it a doozy.
Boyo? What are you,
boyo,
Irish?
You went Irish
over there?
Boyo.
Boyo.
Yeah. But, but I
let
mean,
us show you a party.
Yeah, well, I mean, I, this is just, yeah, this is so exciting. I feel lucky, like the luck of the Irish has been bestowed upon us with all of these amazing announcements that Disney came out with. So to start off, four new Avatar films, speaking of Avatar, from the Fox acquisition,
But the real big news, the real big news, and the reason why we're bringing this up is the three Star Wars films planned for holiday seasons in 2022, 2024, and 2026.
Yeah, this definitely caught me off guard, because if you remember, just a month and a half ago, Disney said that after Episode 9 that Star Wars would go on hiatus.
Right.
But I guess hiatus in the Disney world means just an extra year, apparently.
Well, I mean, what did you expect? For them to put it to bed for, like, two decades?
Not two decades, but, I mean, I didn't think it was only going to be the standard 2 years plus one.
Well,
literally.
Well, hold on. Remember, though, that recently we've been getting a Star Wars movie every year because of the spinoffs.
So their hiatus is just, we're going to just stretch it out to two to three years.
I guess so.
I mean, I don't know. I thought, like, it was going to be like
a little bit of time,
like, you know, maybe like 4 or 5 years, you know, something like that.
When you hear the term hiatus, you think, right, 4, 5, 6 years.
Something that allows the last movie to breathe.
Right, a little bit of breathing room. 3 years. Doesn't seem like hiatus to me, but then again, keeping in mind the really rapid pace of one movie a year, and especially with The Last Jedi and Solo, 6 months between the films.
Yeah, that was a little too
tight. So when you put it into context of their recent release schedule, 3 years, I guess, compared to what it was, is a good amount of breathing room. This is, I feel like a series needs this every once in a while. It's just a little bit of breathing room. You know, to catch
but it's
their
not
breath.
Really a like when you really think about it, though.
But compared to the release schedule as it is now, it is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still just it's not like.
this is interesting. Is that you wanted it to be longer? You wanted less Star Wars films?
No. My thing is, I want quality. All right.
Right.
I'm worried that if you're going to just churn out,
well, that's why they're taking a 3 year break. Because, they've been churning out a movie a year, so now they're going to do 3 years and then 2 years in between each one. I mean, that's, compared to now, that's like a snail's pace.
I guess. And probably for the Disney world, that's probably a long time or something. I just want quality, all right? Like, I'm one of those people, if it takes 10 years to make the movie and it's awesome, that's worth it.
Right.
You know? I would, give me one decent movie. Give me one really, you know, well-made, decent movie that took 5 years to make versus three crappy ones in 5 years, you know?
Right. Long-time listeners of the show know that we are both firmly of the opinion that we would rather movies and games and TV shows, whatever, be delayed and have it be good than to have it rushed out before it's ready.
So I'm just a little nervous that they're still kind of pushing the button that we still want. Oh, gotta get those out. 2022, 2024, 2024, 2026. Oh, get them out.
I mean, yes, they are jamming.
I don't know why.
That's
some executive at Disney. That's
just pounding the first. Get them out. They're gonna milk.
I'm Mr. Disney. Get them out.
Mr. Disney pounding his fist.
Not Walt Disney. I'm just Mr. Disney. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I don't know
why. Walt Disney was probably called Mr. Disney.
That's what I'm going with.
But they're gonna milk this till the nipples bleed. I mean, this is a cash cow for them. It'll be interesting to see what these three movies are. If they're all related, if they're, you know, it's a new trilogy, or if they're all spinoffs, or what exactly they'll be. Because you have to admit, the release schedule is different than the one they have now, which was, you know, main series, spinoff, main series, spinoff, main series, spinoff. So now we were just getting three. You know, we've had, what, six now in the new Disney era? Or going to have six.
Right.
Right?
Five.
Because
it's Rogue One, Solo.
Are the two spinoffs.
And then the three.
And then three. So five.
Yeah, five.
Okay. So now we're looking at three over the same span. Do you think that they're dropping the spinoff idea? Or do you think they've just not been announced yet? Or do you think
know.
These
they
three
might...
will be spinoffs? Are they 10,
well,
11, 12,
right.
or are they three
that,
spinoffs?
That's another thing. The fact that these were put together like this, three movies, in those two-year gaps.
You have to think it's a trilogy,
right. Is that
going to
be episode 10, 11, 12?
I'll say I'll say this. One of the reasons why people think that Game of Thrones quality is slipping is because the two producer, writer, directors
are going to be doing a Star Wars something.
Right.
And I think that they are scheduled to do some Star Wars films. So this could be
the trilogy
that they are rumored to be working on.
So we'll see how that pans out, but definitely a little eyebrow raising that Disney put on the docket three Star Wars movies, one for 2022, one for 2024, and one for 2026. Look, if they're good, it's worth it. But I just hope that Disney is
doing
what they have to do to make sure that it's quality movies.
They'll be good. I'm more concerned about the four Avatar films.
Yes.
I don't know why they need that many.
Yeah, that's BS. One more note on Star Wars, and something that I just want to just throw in since we're talking about Star Wars right now. Sad news that Peter Mayhew, the original actor that played Chewbacca, passed away last weekend.
Yeah.
It was definitely one of those just hit you in the feels, because it's like the original cast is starting to die off, and it's like, yeah. Oh, man. It was one of those things that, he was a major character in the saga. You may not have seen his face, but he was definitely there living up the role of Chewbacca. And Mark Hamill had some nice words to say about him, and I'll play the clip and let him just take it from here.
But what was so remarkable about him was his spirit and his kindness and his gentleness was so close to what a Wookiee is. Mm-hmm. Sure, they're fierce animals, but they're like your family dog. There's no one more loving and the unconditional love than the family pet. And Peter was like that. He just radiated happiness and warmth. He was always up for a laugh, and we hit it off immediately and stayed friends.
So there you go, Mark Hamill saying some last words on his friend Peter Mayhew.
Really nice, really nice words there.
Yeah. So we will remember Peter Mayhew, the original actor that played Chewbacca, passed away last weekend. But Disney was still cranking out some more news. What else do you want to cover?
Big week for Disney, and I want to just put this out there right now. If you have not seen Avengers Endgame yet, we're probably going to get into some spoilers. So if you haven't seen Endgame yet, one, go see it. Two, skip ahead to non-fortune cookie odd news.
So, can I play the spoiler?
Yes.
It's a spoiler! It's a spoiler! Don't listen! Go away!
So,
yes.
Yeah. So, go away. Skip to the non-fortune cookie odd news, because we're going to get into some spoilers while talking about the latest Spider-Man Far From Home trailer.
Yes.
You wouldn't expect there to be Endgame spoilers here, but Disney and Marvel are not pulling any punches. They are going hard on this one with their first post-Endgame trailer. They are laying it all out there. I want to play a short clip from the end of the trailer here that really sums up things. So let's play the clip.
You're right. You may not be ready, but this is my responsibility.
Saving the world requires sacrifice. Sometimes people die.
I always feel like I'm putting my friends in danger.
The world needs the next Iron Man.
You going to step up or not?
So there you go. The world needs the next Iron Man. Are you going to step up? This trailer is incredible. It opens right away with Peter mourning the death of Tony Stark, Iron Man.
Yep.
I mean, they're going to continue right off from where Endgame left off. They're going to let it be known the ramifications and the consequences of the events of that film going forward and how it's impacting the characters of this universe. I am so excited for this next chapter to see how these characters deal with the fallout from Endgame. And I love the fact that Disney is going to address it head on. Their first post-Endgame trailer, they're like, here we go. This is it. This is what this movie is going to be about. This passing of the torch type thing that Endgame gave you a little bit of, that I've sort of been alluding to, with this Spider-Man Far From Home thing, the whole new Avengers thing. Spider-Man eventually, according to my knowledge, is supposed to take over the new Avengers. And I think the trailer lays it out right there.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't shock me that, you know, there's going to be that passing of the torch that he's going to be the leader of the new Avengers.
Yeah.
But
it's mentioned twice in that trailer. The cops early in the trailer say, are you going to be the next Iron Man?
Yeah.
And Spider-Man quips, oh, I'm too busy doing your job, so I can't. And then there at the end of the trailer, the world needs the next Iron Man. So it's clearly setting it up.
Yeah. So, but that's not really that much of a shocker, in my opinion. You know, I kind of knew that was coming.
It's nice to know, though, that Disney is going to keep that continuity.
Yeah.
That they're going to address it head on. They're not just going to be like, oh, this happened and we're just going to move along. They're going to take the time to really let it sink in and show how the characters are dealing with it. It's so important in these movies that we get those character moments. And I feel like they've been doing a really good job of that with with the movies lately in the MCU. But the real big shocker comes in the middle of the trailer when they introduce the character Mysterio, where Nick Fury casually mentions that this Mysterio is from Earth, but not our Earth. And then Peter Parker goes, are you telling me there's a multiverse?
Boom.
So right there in the middle of the trailer, super casually, they introduce the Marvel multiverse, which is very much a thing in the Marvel canon. Enter Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse just came out. What was it? Last year. And so that sort of introduced people to the idea of multiple Spider-Men. That's not part of the MCU, but it looks like the MCU might dabble in that a little bit as well. And this opens up so many possibilities.
There's your legal loophole, you know, if Robert Downey Jr. ever gets the itch to play Iron Man again or something, you know?
Yeah, so what do you make of this? Is this a good move, a bad move? Is this a wait and see type thing?
I think it's just like just one of those. We have that as like a cord we can pull if Robert Downey Jr. wants to come back.
Right, we have an escape plan.
Yeah, because let's be honest, if Robert Downey Jr. comes up to Marvel and is like, you know what, I changed my mind, I want to play Iron Man again, they're not going to say no. They will find a way. To write him back into the storyline.
I don't know. I don't get paid the big Hollywood bucks to do the writing. But if I were put in charge of this, I think that, one, you have to address the idea that there could be other Iron Men and Spider-Men and other characters that we've lost in Endgame. And I also think that they'd be wise to have the characters come to a realization that, no, that's not our Iron Man. That's not our Black Widow. That's not our Gamora. You know, I think that can make for a really poignant scene where the characters may be like, we could go get them back. We could have them back. But then come to that realization like, no, it wouldn't be the same. They get to the precipice and then they have to be pulled back of their own volition to realize, like, what's done is what's done, and we need to move on for this to be, like, a healthy, normal coping thing. Now, will Disney and Marvel go that route? I don't know. I don't think they're going to go the route of outright resurrecting Iron Man, because I feel like that would be too big a slap in the face. You know what I mean?
Well, no, they're not going to do that anytime soon, because
I don't think they should ever do it. I hope they don't. I hope they go with my route more.
But
to address it, but then walk back from it and let people know, like, yes, it's possible, but that these characters can't do it for those emotional, weighty reasons.
But let's be honest. If Robert Downey Jr. comes back to Marvel in 5 years and says, you know, I kind of want to do it, you don't think they would use this as kind of like the ripcord? Be like, oh, yeah. Oh, remember that thing we talked about in Spider-Man right after that movie? Remember that?
I mean, yes, it definitely opens that door. But I also think it opens up lots of cans of worms with that door. And so I hope they don't go that route. I really hope they don't go that route. I will say this.
Nobody's ever really gone.
Well, I know. you expressed to me before the show that you were concerned about the Disney juggernaut with line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was funny because we actually kind of poo-pooed Red Letter Media when they made that video critiquing the whole nobody's ever really gone, but now it's kind of like, is this like Disney's mantra now that like you know, that, oh, we can always bring back somebody, you know? Like, I don't know.
So,
even people that are dead, we can bring them back.
God, every time I talk about Disney, I know I sound like a fanboy. But 100 years of doing this, Disney knows what they're doing. They could have gone with more recognizable heroes for the MCU, and they didn't. They went Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther. They didn't need to, but they knew how to make a good story with what they've been given. And we always talk about art from adversity, and they do a really good job of making do with what they've been given. They got, no offense, a sort of broken Star Wars franchise at the time, after the prequels. After the prequels, what?
Wow, what? What do you mean broken Star Wars franchise?
They left off with the prequel trilogy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a moneymaker.
No, it's still a moneymaker. I'm talking...
Make it sound like it was worthless or something.
I'm talking story-wise. It was kind of in shambles after the prequels.
I mean...
I know you're going to disagree with me. I know you're going to disagree with me.
I think you're looking at this from a very favorable light from Disney or something.
They brought it back in a much bigger way than people had anticipated, I think.
All right, how about this? Instead of a dormant franchise, I think that's what you're going for.
Oh, sure.
You make it sound like it was worthless.
No, not money-wise. I'm talking story-wise. The prequels broke the Star Wars franchise, man.
I mean, they didn't break it.
Midichlorians, Jar Jar Binks.
It was subpar.
Sand?
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the original trilogy, but I don't think it was broken. You make it sound like Disney did some sort of healing act or something.
I think they did. I think they did.
You are such a Disney fanboy.
I see, and I knew that was going to be the person. What I'm saying is Disney has an uncanny ability to make really, really great content really consistently, and they know what works and they know what doesn't work, and they know what sells and they know what doesn't sell, and they have their finger firmly on the pulse of where entertainment is going and what is good entertainment. And they, whatever you want to call it, dormant, broken, whatever, they helped uplift Star Wars from the mire of the prequels. They brought in Marvel characters that nobody knew, nobody cared about, nobody recognized. What?
You better watch out, because there are...
Fight me.
No, it's not just me. There are millennials that actually love the prequel trilogy.
And they would be wrong.
I'm telling
you. We've gone over this.
Any of you guys from the subreddit prequel memes, tweet at Mikey. Let him know what you think.
Oh, I love that subreddit. That is a great subreddit.
Because
they're
just not good
movies.
They love those movies.
For the memeability.
No, but they love them. They still love them.
Whatever. Look, we're getting sidetracked from the real conversation here. And that is that I don't have the same fears as you do when it comes to Disney and seeming this seeming specter of resurrecting anybody they want to resurrect. I feel like they've been respectful of the franchises that they've been entrusted with. And until we see otherwise, I think it's safe to say that they will continue to steward those franchises in a respectful and consistently good manner. And that's what I think. And we haven't seen anything to evidence otherwise. But I'm not particularly concerned with that. I'm just really excited about where the MCU is going. I'm really excited for the next chapter. And I think that this whole Mysterio thing being the hero, I think that everybody should take that with a huge grain of salt, because he is a con man. His character is traditionally a con man that uses special effects and props to get away with huge heists. So I'm envisioning that there's probably not really that much weight behind him being the hero in the multiverse thing. I think it might all be an elaborate ruse, which is another red herring type thing for why I don't think that they're going to go full multiverse here. I think they're going to toy with it a little bit, but they're going to pull it back before it gets too far.
Okay. Well, hopefully that's the more sane route, and hopefully that's the way they go instead of trying to bring back somebody that died or something.
See, I might favor Disney too much, but I think you don't give them nearly enough credit.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Make your choice and let us know on the Twitters. Am I being too harsh, or is Mike too much of a Disney fanboy? Let us know.
They saved both of our favorite franchises.
All right. Well, here's for those that didn't get the no one's ever really gone. This was the Red Letter Media's criticism of the phrase no one's ever really gone.
Don't worry, Rose. Nobody's ever really gone. Even foam latex puppets that are gone aren't really gone.
Oh, God, that guy just fell in the Sarlacc pit monster.
But nobody's ever really gone. Don't worry, Jango. You're not really gone.
You got clones.
Salacious B. Crumb. Wait a minute, you never died.
Wait, Obi-Wan, no, he's not really gone. Don't walk away. Cut his head off or something. He's not really gone. Because nobody's ever really gone.
Boom.
So, there you go. That's the criticism.
You know what's funny? Is yeah. that they basically did that before Disney even took over by shoehorning Jango Fett into the prequel trilogy. Because they didn't have a Boba Fett.
What? What are you trying? What, that...
They basically...
They wanted to have their own Mandalorian, cool, badass
yeah,
bounty hunter guy.
So they just shoehorned that in there. They're yeah. already guilty of it, Rich.
I don't think so.
Oh, I don't come think on. So. Yes, they are.
But there you go. That's our entertainment entree. Yeah, make your choice. Am I too much of a Disney hater, or is Mikey too much of a Disney fanboy? Or both. It might be both.
I think it's both.
So let us know on the Twitters. But that will wrap up the Disney heavy entertainment entree. Woo, man. All right. We got to settle down after all that discussion of horse racing and Disney properties because we got to get ready for the non-fortune cookie odd news coming your way next. We'll be right back.
Hey, what do you hear? What do you say? This is Vic DiMatteo, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Hi, I'm game show host Todd Newton from Whammy, Family Game Night, Hollywood Showdown, and more. And I don't know if you've heard about the 24-hour game show marathon. It's happening June 8th out of the great city of Philadelphia. And this is where four super fans come together to recreate 24 of their favorite game shows. It's really cool. But they're not just doing it to have a good time. They're doing it to raise some money for a great cause, Child's Play. It really helps out children and families that could use a little assistance. If you'd like to donate, please go to GameShowMarathon.com. GameShowMarathon.com. And it is there where you can watch all of the festivities again on June 8th from Philadelphia. We appreciate your support. And long live game shows, baby.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We are done the sports sampler and the entertainment entree. So that, of course, means it's time for our third and final portion of the show. You know what it is, Mike?
I absolutely know what it is. It's time for the wacky, the wild, the always entertaining, non-fortune cookie odd news.
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
My nipples look like milk duds.
Holy shnikes.
It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
It's not of this world. I don't know exactly what it is or what it's doing, but this is not human intelligence, okay? It's not human intelligence we're facing!
How you doing? See? I'm doing great.
Mandada bastata. I don't make this stuff up.
I'll take a pound of nuts.
That's a lot of nuts! That'll be $4, baby! You want fries with that?
I've seen the celery dance across the baseball fields.
You had me at meat tornado.
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Okay! what does that mean?
And now, it's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
So, sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders, go to the bathroom, because you're in for a hell of a ride.
news.
That's right, everybody. It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news. Here in this segment, Rich researches the news, he reads the news, and I react to the news. He finds all these weird and wacky stories and keeps them hidden from me so that all my reactions are my genuine gut reactions to hearing these stories for the very first time. I don't know what's about to happen. You guys don't know what's about to happen. And even Rich doesn't know what's about to happen because these stories always take us down wacky and wild paths.
That's right. You never know what's coming up on the non-fortune cookie odd news.
Like this!
Like this!
I have an odd news story.
Yeah, Mike wanted to mention something.
That I literally found right before this segment.
Okay.
So I apologize if this is haphazardly rushed together, but I just had to bring this up because I think it's super appropriate given what we were just talking about, movies. So you think we love movies? Not as much as this Philadelphia area man who reportedly saw 316 movies in 2018 at a single Regal theater in South Philly. 316 movies.
So he was basically there every day.
Well, that's what his reaction was there are only 365 days in a year. So, yeah, basically he saw a movie every single day. So Miller, 65, of West Philadelphia, saw more movies in 2018 than any other Regal Crown Club Rewards member in the country. As a result, he got a private screening at Riverview Plaza and a $500 Regal gift card. The manager said that...
Woo!
Yeah, well, what's $500? It's like, what, 12 movies? Something like that?
With
those 3D IMAX prices?
Yeah, right. Depends on if you got the IMAX or the luxury chairs and stuff like that. Yeah, jacks the price up.
How much money do you think he spent at that theater? Oh, my God. $500. What would you say is the average cost of a ticket? $10?
Oh, no.
Well, I figure he's going during the week. So it's not like weekend primetime prices, right?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, I just know when we went to go get tickets for Endgame, it was at least $15 a ticket.
Okay, let's do $12 a ticket times 316 shows. It's almost $3,800 at the movie theaters in 2018. That's crazy.
And you have to bet that a couple of them he got thirsty for and he went for a Coke.
Right, a Coke, even if it's just the water, that's still going to set you back another $4 or $5. So yeah, probably close to $4,000 in movies last year. But anyway, he really loved the movies. Sometimes, though, he had trouble paying attention during movies, which is why I saw a few films multiple times last year, including Black Panther and Creed 2. Do you want to take a guess at how many times he saw these movies?
12?
Nope.
20?
Nope.
50?
25 times each.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you thought it was crazy. I saw Endgame 3 times.
Yeah.
25 times each. He actually considers Black Panther to be his favorite movie of all time. But this year, he's most looking forward to
really?
The Secret Life of Pets 2.
Okay, no, I don't trust this guy now.
He says he skips the horror movies. There's enough horror living in this life. He laughed.
Wow.
That got really dark.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Way to be chipper over there.
Right, I know. For somebody that's seen that many movies, he's sort of down on everything, right?
This is probably his only excitement in life.
I mean, I guess so. He says he goes basically every day. He stops on his way home from work. He works at the Philadelphia airport, so he stops at this theater in South Philly, and he sees a movie. He says sometimes he goes in and he prays and he meditates. So
okay.
Yeah.
You know you can do that without paying $20 to go see a movie.
Apparently not. So there you go. And he also, one last little tidbit, he's not a popcorn guy. He prefers Nestle's Bunch of Cruncha. So
oh great, the ones they charge like $7 for.
Yeah. I mean they're delicious, but just not $7 delicious.
Yeah, you can get them at the dollar store.
But yeah. 316 movies, the most of anybody in the entire country, right here in Philly.
Yay. Is that something we should be proud of?
I think so. What else are we known for? Cheesesteaks. That's it.
Swiss cheese pervert.
The Swiss cheese pervert.
That's Norristown,
right.
Yeah.
That's Norristown. It's not even Philadelphia. It's Norristown. We're not known for much, so we got to hold on to those little things that we do have.
Okay.
I just think it's totally... I can't imagine sitting through a movie 25 times.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably doing it like back to back to back to back to back to back.
Well, right, that's the thing. Remember, he's seeing it in theaters 25 times.
Right.
So it's not like It's not like you watching Star Wars over your entire life 25 times.
Yeah.
This is if you went to a theater. Remember, movies usually only have like a 2 month run at best. So 25 times in 2 months. That's kind of absurd.
That seems like it would get old really fast. But whatever.
Panther and Creed 2.
Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. And apparently Black Panther made him very happy. Favorite movie of all time.
Okay.
So there you go. So just had to bring that up. My own odd news story.
All right. let's go. Let's. I got five that I have prepared for you today.
Okay.
We're gonna do. Let's do this first story in Tennessee.
Yo, we're from Tennessee.
It's good to yell at people and tell them you're from Tennessee. That way you'll be safe.
And this is a whole page long because I have to talk about this.
Okay, what do you got?
A judge has ordered a mental evaluation for a Tennessee man.
Yikes.
Who was able to hide a 24-inch long machete so deeply tucked into and covered by his roll of belly fat that metal detectors couldn't reveal the presence of the weapon.
Shut up, fat boy.
I'm not fat. I'm festively plump.
how is that even possible? 24 inches?
Yes. 30-year-old.
Jesus. That is
a
lot of machete.
Yes, this is a lot of machete. 30-year-old Frederick Johnson was busted for aggravated criminal trespass at a bus station. So, wow. What a charge to go to jail for.
Yeah, really.
Ah, damn, bus is late.
Better whip out my stomach machete.
According to cops, he was causing fear among the passengers, patrons, and staff at the bus stop. When Memphis Police Department officers conducted a thorough pat-down of Johnson, they couldn't find weapons that were on him. He was serving a 3-year probationary term for a late 2017 aggravated assault conviction. Johnson had been sentenced to 3 years in prison, but he got it reduced down to probationary terms.
Probably should have stayed. Probably should have kept him in there.
Yeah, especially after this development.
Yeah, really.
So how did the 6'2", 320-pound Johnson succeed in smuggling a 2-foot machete into the county jail?
That is a lot. That's a big blade. Like, where? I know you said in his rolls.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Johnson passed through the initial metal detectors inside the lockup. So he actually made it like a good way through with the machete on him.
Wow.
It wasn't until he was patted down for the last time by jail personnel who then noticed that there was an unknown object that was sticking out from a large fat roll.
Oh my God.
Shut up, fat boy. I'm not fat. I'm festively plump.
During the initial searches, the jail personnel noted that there was a continuous piece of flesh, and one of the jail members thought it may have been his member, so they asked him, "Is that your penis?"
Oh my God.
The suspect answered affirmatively to try to pass through.
Oh my God. A continuous piece of flesh.
Yes.
I don't know why that sounds so disturbing to me.
I think this is weird that it got to a point where I had, you know, these jail personnel had to ask, "Hey, is that your penis?"
Oh my God.
Like, wow.
Jeez.
We're in no man's land. We have no idea what anything is over here.
Right.
What is going on?
It's uncharted territory.
Shut up, fat boy. I'm not fat. I'm festively plump.
So jailers then noticed another object that was protruding to the right of his person. Johnson again claimed that this was also his genitalia.
What?
But that's when investigators became suspicious.
Off to the right? Of the right of where?
Of his body, I guess.
It makes it sound like it's coming out of his side.
Yeah.
Like, his penis is just coming out where his like spleen is or something.
That's my second penis.
That's my second penis, yeah.
I guess that's my backup one.
What, in case the other one falls off, or what happens to the first one?
I don't know.
Oh my God, that machete falls. That's what happens.
So obviously, when the possibility of the mail saying that he had two different cardinal directions of his penis, that's when
that is hilarious.
That's when investigators decided to do a more thorough search, and that is when they found. okay, wow, there's more.
What?
They found the 24-inch machete, two knives, a taser, and a bag that contained imitation narcotics.
Shut up, fat boy! I'm not fat! I'm festively plump!
Imitation?
Wow.
Imitation? He couldn't even spring for the real stuff?
I don't know how...
What an amateur.
He must be so big. The stomach must flow over... His waist.
You need to have a lot, but like a 2-foot machete.
Yes.
That's like nobody can see, but it's like big. It's like this.
His stomach has got to be so big that it just flops over his waist and his area around his penis. And then underneath, he can fit all this stuff.
It needs to be. Not even like that's not even like a stomach. That needs to be like a flap of skin.
Right.
Like a tarp or something.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? That is so bizarre.
Because this is a lot of stuff to stick in a body roll.
That is a lot. Two knives, a 2-foot machete.
A taser.
Like that is a, like you can't even, that would be difficult to fit in a backpack.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's getting it in his stomach roll.
Right. That is alarming.
Shut up, fat boy. I'm not fat. I'm festively plump.
Also, I know the story doesn't mention, but I really hope that the knives and the machete were, like, sheathed. Like, they weren't just, like, the blades sticking out, because, like, wouldn't you be scared to, like, just slice your gut open?
Yeah. Well, he had it covered. He had the machete and the knives covered with a pair of extra gym shorts. That's nice. I don't know if that helps.
So, really, there's a pair of gym shorts in there, too.
Yes.
So, it's not just the knives. They're wrapped up in a pair of... gym shorts that adds extra bulk to it as well.
Yes, and it's somehow all stuck under that fat roll.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that is
shut up, fat boy. I'm not fat. I'm festively plump.
That is an alarming amount of skin.
Yes,
but also to keep it all there without like moving or falling, like
yeah, that's why I'm saying it has to be like one long sheet of fat, and that you just like. Plop it over.
Yeah, and sheet of fat is a great descriptor because that's exactly what it would have to be.
Yeah. The discovery of all this resulted in Johnson being charged with an extra felony count of introducing contraband into a penal institution. So there you go. He's going to face more charges now because of
it. Was it worth it? Did you really need a 2-foot machete?
I don't know.
You couldn't just sharpen a toothbrush into a shiv like normal prisoners.
Right. Come on.
Come on. Jeez.
Basic lessons here.
Prison 101, people.
All right. Next story, going to Iowa in this one.
Okay. Middle of nowhere.
Well, apparently there's nothing to do in the middle of nowhere because an Iowa man that's now facing child porn charges.
Oh, that's not good.
Was caught. Because he brought his gravy-covered computer into Best Buy's for repairs.
Did you say gravy-covered?
Yes. And a Geek Squad member discovered the illicit child pornography images on the machine.
Come on, baby. I want some gravy. A little kiss is what I'm waiting for. Baby. All my mashed potatoes. Baby. Come on and treat me.
Oh, yeah, this guy really loves gravy.
So you mean actual gravy, then?
Yes.
Okay, I was a little worried gravy was like a euphemism or something.
No,
okay.
This is not the euphemism, actually.
Oh, thank God.
No,
that was going to be really, really bad.
No, we're talking about actual brown gravy.
Actually, better question, how? What was he doing that he got gravy? So much gravy on his computer that he needed to take it in to get repairs.
Hey, you know, sometimes,
was just having a really, like, messy turkey dinner,
and
or like a hot turkey sandwich, and the gravy just
spilled it. Or sometimes, you know, when you're watching
child porn,
he wants to, you know,
got to have some gravy.
Yeah, he wants to dip his nuts in the gravy. I don't know.
Wow. All
Let's
right.
get to bashing butts as well as D's nuts.
It's like, oh yeah,
warm.
What was warm? It's not about the texture. It's just, oh, warm.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed, it was erotic.
So he has like a little one of those little gravy boats, and he's just like plop.
Yep.
Dips and dunks them right in.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Investigators say that 54-year-old Robert Leo Watso brought his gravy-covered laptop to a Best Buy near Des Moines.
That has got to be the dumbest thing. If I spilled that much gravy on my laptop, I would just throw. I couldn't bring myself to go to like a Best Buy or an Apple Store and be like, I spilled a whole bucket of gravy on my laptop because I'm an idiot. Please help me. I would be too shame-filled to do that. You know what I mean?
What's the matter? You don't have a big container of gravy next to your computer workstation?
No.
You don't have gravy next to your Wacket station?
No, no. Oh god. Terrible thoughts running through my head.
Watso said that the gravy spilled all over his keyboard, which rendered his laptop unusable. Watson was about to buy a replacement computer and was going to pay the Geek Squad an additional fee to transfer files from the used gravy-covered computer to the newly purchased computer.
Dude.
And that's when during the file migration, the Geek Squad workers noted that there were multiple images that they believed was child pornography. That's when they contacted cops who seized both computers. In the police interview, Watson then admitted that he did download images of 14 and 15-year-old girls. He claimed that he downloaded the photos because he was going to tell other people about them. Which,
what?
Yeah, I don't know what universe you're living in.
That makes it better. When he says tell other people, does he mean like report it to the authorities? Or does he mean like, hey, Bob, check out these child porn pictures I have? Yeah. Like, what
wrong,
is...
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
Like, yeah. not that the context matters. It's wrong regardless. But I really want to know what he means by show it to other people.
Yeah, I think he was, like, going to brag about it.
Oh, my God. And he thought this would somehow be okay?
Yeah, it's no big deal, right?
He's telling this to the cops. He's like, no, I know that's illegal, but what if I were to tell you that I was going to distribute it as well? And the cop's like, oh, well, in that case... That's fine. You're just the porn. You're just the kiddie porn middleman. That's okay.
And of course, to make things even worse, the file names were actually labeled 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds.
This dude doesn't know anything about computers.
Wow.
Everybody knows you name the folder stuff. Don't look in here. Go away.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. No shame. He deserves to be caught.
Yeah.
Like, one, what he's doing is disgusting and reprehensible. But two, he didn't even try to
right.
be savvy about it.
No, he didn't. No.
He probably had it on his desktop, too.
Yeah, probably at this rate.
And he probably had, like, old man-sized files where they're, like, you know, 100
huge,
by 100. Pic- yeah.
Yeah,
like
the
gigantic.
huge icons. Yeah.
Yeah. He's probably got in his shortcuts or something.
I need to get access to them fast.
Yeah, real fast.
With my gravy.
With my gravy, yeah. I still want to know what he was doing that he spilled that much gravy. Like, you spill a little bit. Okay, you clean it up, whatever. But if you spill enough to need repairs, what were you doing? What were you doing with the gravy?
I'm telling you, man. I think that's it. I think you dip your nuts in
it. He's dipping his nuts.
Let's get to bashing butts as well as D's nuts.
Yeah, just
dipped
right in
there.
Dip his
nuts right in there.
Right in there.
Oh, warm.
He is now charged with possessing depictions of minors engaged in sexual acts. He's locked up in the county jail on a $50,000 cash bond. So, yeah, he's not getting out.
What a numbskull.
Yeah. He actually labeled it 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds. Oh, you can't write this stuff. And, of course, the gravy thing's the kicker.
From top to bottom, I've never heard of a dumber criminal.
Yeah.
Probably. Like, you just have to be so stupid.
All right, now let's get to our Florida stories.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
This one's just funny to imagine. A Florida man was charged with his third DUI over the weekend after he crashed his lawnmower into a cop car.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
Well, that's an interesting way to get a DUI.
How fast do lawnmowers go? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I'm sure you can crank them up.
Yeah, but like so fast that you can't react. Right, that's what I mean.
I've lost control. Did you find an estimate?
There's such thing as racing mowers?
There you go. There's a whole motorsport dedicated to this.
Rich.
There is.
Oh my God, what did I just stumble upon? The National Lawnmower Racing Series.
Oh my gosh. What? There you go. Yes, it's a thing.
No.
Wow.
I can't believe this. So
you can trick out your lawnmower.
Oh my God. According to Google, the speeds vary by class. Stock classes may only go about 6 to 8 miles per hour. There's no reason to be running a cop cars at 6 to 8 miles per hour. The prepared or modified has been known to go as fast as 85 miles per hour.
Oh my God.
However, at the track, they only do 35 to 40. At the track, there's tracks?
Yes.
What? Oh my God. Rich, this is amazing.
I think we're going to need to crash this. We need to figure out how we enter into these lawnmower competitions.
Should I look at get involved, host a race? We can become a sponsor.
Oh my God, the Crispy Noodle sponsors racing.
I am unreasonably excited about about this. The Lawnmower Racing Association. Do you want to know where it's based?
Where?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. You want to fly down to Bama?
Not a knock against Alabama, but it's absolutely a knock against Alabama. They have videos. Oh, we're doing a deep dive into this one day. The 2019. Oh, they have a schedule for the 2019 season. Okay, hold on. Let's see. It's a blank page.
So, we haven't gotten that far yet.
The website is not.
Shut up, you darn Yankee. We didn't get this far yet, all right? We just started.
So their first race is May 31st in Georgia.
Damn Georgia.
And then they have a race in.
They're too progressive for us.
With Georgia's too progressive, you have major problems. There's Oklahoma, Oregon, South Carolina, Iowa. I guess South Carolina would be the closest. The Southern Nationals.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe. Can you believe there's no comments on this page, though?
Well, we need to change that.
We do.
We need to be the first comment.
I'm about to leave.
Yeah, we're the Crispy Noodle would like to sponsor.
No. After the show.
Our budget is $5.
Our budget, yeah, we can't do more than five.
We can't do any more than that.
Do you think we could get our logo on a mower? Like the Crispy Noodle? Like, how much do you think it would cost to get our logo on a mower? Like, you know how they do in NASCAR.
Best we can do is $5.
Yeah, right?
Whoever wants to take our $5 and put our logo on your lawnmower, we'll sponsor you.
I love this. They have a thing here. Why lawnmower racing? Unique. Lawnmower racing captures eyes and ears. When you're up again, the number one brand... that's supposed to be against. The number one brand in your industry... Lawnmower racing can help you differentiate yourself.
We don't have a spell checker.
Not at all. Relatable. Everyone relates to cutting the grass and working in the yard. This context is a great platform, a perfect fit to market and promote your lawn and garden brand using lawnmower racing. Think of it as NASCAR on a normal budget. Think of it as outsmarting, not outspending your competition. Wow.
Okay.
So there you go. We're gonna
found a new hobby.
We're going to sponsor the lawnmower racing thing. What is it? Lawnmower Racing Association?
It's the Lawnmower Racing Association.
Okay, LMRA.
Their website is letsmow.com. It's super easy.
Wow.
Letsmow.com. Oh my God, I love this so much. This has nothing to do with the story. This is just these tangents. You shouldn't allow me to research things. It's dangerous.
Well, there we go. We're going to sponsor the Lawnmower Racing Association.
Oh, wow.
So they get back to this story here.
So he crashed into a cop car.
Yes.
So according to the Lawnmower Racing Association, normal lawnmowers only go 6 to 8 miles an hour. That's not very fast.
Well, this guy
I feel like you shouldn't be crashing into things at 6 miles an hour. That's like a brisk walk, isn't it?
The police department said in the news release that an officer was tending to a matter on Saturday morning when a man on a lawnmower crashed into the back of his police vehicle. The officer heard a loud noise and walked outside to find 68-year-old Gary Anderson on a lawnmower and noticed that there was minor damage to the rear of the police vehicle.
Oh, no.
So I guess it does do some damage.
I guess so. So the cop car was parked.
Yes.
Okay.
This guy hit a parked cop car.
So he hit a parked cop car. Question, was he riding the mower on the road or did he drive off the lawn? Like, was he mowing the grass and lost control and, like, crashed into the car? Or was he just driving it down the street, as people do in Florida?
I'm gonna go with he probably was driving down the street because...
Drunk at 6 miles an hour.
Because Anderson admitted that he was drunk. Police said that his demeanor rapidly went back and forth from laughing to aggressive moods. So, okay. Yeah, he's a little bit crazy. That's good.
Yeah. Typical Florida stuff.
Right, gotta have some crazy people. After failing to do the field sobriety tests, Anderson was then taken to the Haines City Police Department, where all of a sudden he made a startling claim.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. This is gonna,
is this going to be his grand excuse for why he possibly could have driven a lawnmower into a cop car?
No.
Oh.
No, he's fine with admitting that he was drunk and that he drove the thing, he drove the lawnmower into the cop car.
Oh, okay.
But suddenly, when he was about to go into his jail cell, he suddenly claimed that he was a spy and he was poisoned. Oh my gosh.
So it is an excuse.
He's poisoned.
I've been with alcohol while riding my lawnmower.
Oh my gosh!
Wait, does he mean he was poisoned in that moment?
Yeah, he's taking responsibility for driving the lawnmower into the cop car, but all of a sudden,
so at that moment in the police station,
yes, poisoned.
Okay, how? Wow.
Yes, and then he's a spy.
Oh, of course.
Don't forget about that. He's a spy.
Of course. A terrible spy.
Yes.
Because you're riding lawnmowers drunk. I can't think of a more, like outwardly conspicuous thing to be doing as a spy. Like, it's the least stealthy thing you could possibly choose to do. Drive a lawnmower drunk. It's loud. It's crazy. And you're causing a ruckus and a scene.
Yeah. So just in case, Anderson was then transported to a regional medical center. That's where he had to get a breath sample. And that's when police were able to actually conclude that his blood alcohol concentration was 0.241, which is more than 3 times the legal limit.
Wow.
So in a way, he made it worse.
Yeah.
Because now they have proof that he was drunk.
Well, oh my God. Why didn't they just breathalyze him at the beginning?
Because he thought he was poisoned.
No, but I mean, like, they waited so long in the process to give him a test. You know what I mean?
Maybe the cop... You mean back when he first hit the cop?
He failed the field sobriety test.
Yeah, but maybe they didn't have a breathalyzer thing on him or something.
So they just didn't bother?
Yeah.
These cops are so lazy.
He's driving a lawnmower drunk. I think that's enough.
They're like, you know what? We're just going to call it.
We're going to call it a day. There you go.
Yeah. It's clear what's going on here.
Police then immediately arrested him again. and... they noted that his driver's license was suspended in March of 1978. So,
oh,
there you go. Please don't ever trust him ever behind the wheel of anything.
That's why he was driving the lawnmower.
Yeah.
He had no other means of transportation. He had to.
Yeah.
It was out of necessity.
All right. Another Florida story here.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida and they're crazy.
Boy, man, this one's just brazen here. Two Florida lovebirds are facing criminal charges after they were caught having sex Monday night on the sidewalk directly outside of police headquarters in Key West.
Wow.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
That is very brazen.
Cops say that Gary Hill and Crystal Francis had shared a pint of vodka. Wow, bam.
Jeez.
That'll
do it.
0 to 100 there.
Yeah.
They shared the pint of vodka before they began trysting in public. Cops got a call from a female passerby who reported that a duo was about to have sex in front of their headquarters. Then a patrolman went out to investigate. He spotted the 46-year-old Gary Hill with his pants down having sex with Crystal Francis, who was completely naked.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
They just want to put on a show.
Yeah. That's when they started actively engaging in sexual intercourse. When Hill was arrested, Hill screamed, "Look, man, I'm just too horny. She was giving it up to me right then and there." And that, oh, this is just a classic Key West moment.
What? That doesn't even make sense. Like, that's what Key West is known for, just having sex on the sidewalk by a police station.
We need to call the marketing people for the traveling business behind Key West and be like,
right,
here's commercial.
That's right.
Have a classic Key West moment.
That's right.
Bang your significant other outside of the police headquarters.
So romantic.
It's a classic Key West moment.
It's classic.
Only in Key West.
Right. Creating those memories you'll take with you forever.
Yes. Key West.
Classic Key West.
Visit Key West today.
I mean, that would definitely get people to visit. It would also get people arrested.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
Hill was arrested for indecent exposure and booked into the county jail on a misdemeanor charge. And he is locked up on $7,500 bond.
Wait, what about the woman?
Not arrested.
She was nude.
She was severely intoxicated, and she was taken to a hospital for treatment. So,
I mean, she was part of it, though.
I guess maybe after she's out of the hospital,
they'll arrest her.
Maybe, but
sober up, then get arrested.
Yeah, maybe something like that. But as of right now, not charged with anything.
Huh.
All right, and one more Florida odd news story to wrap up the non-Fortune Cookie odd news.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida and they're crazy.
A Florida man who stuffed a large Angus beef rib roast down the front of his pants at a Florida supermarket had his meat heist spoiled by an alert store employee.
Oh, now you fucked up. You have fucked up now.
Cops. Okay. Yeah. Cops say that 40-year-old Eric Warden jammed a $62 7-pound rib roast into his pants.
That is a huge chunk of meat.
Yes.
Damn.
He was going for it all.
Hello.
Yep. Go big or go home.
That's right.
He was then about to leave, but it was thwarted by a manager who approached the accused thief to challenge him about the roast concealed in his pants.
What gave it away? The massive bulge?
Yeah. So is that a rib roast in your pants or are you happy to see me?
Right. You said 7 pounds of meat.
Yep.
That's a lot of meat.
Yes, it is.
That is an enormous piece of meat.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Warden reportedly declared as he removed the roast from his pants, quote, "All right, you got me. Can we just call it even and I'll go?
You can have my pants meat back if you just let me go." They can't sell that.
When the manager said that he presses charges on all shoplifters, Warden then ran out the exit doors.
What else is he supposed to do, I guess?
Warden was then apprehended in the shopping plaza where the Publix grocery store was located. But here's the kicker. He now claims that he did not actually steal the rib roast because he dropped the meat before fleeing.
I mean, I guess he's not wrong. He didn't leave the premises with the meat.
Oh.
So think of it this way. You pick up an item at the grocery store. You put it in your cart. You say, you know what? I don't want it anymore. You put it back on the shelf. The pants are the cart of the body.
Does that count?
I mean, he didn't leave with it, right? He essentially put it into his own personal shopping cart that was attached, that he was wearing. And then he decided he didn't want it, and he put it back.
Yeah, is that a valid?
I think he's got a fair defense here. Yeah, this is grocery crime unit.
Yeah, I don't. He. There is a point. He did not have the meat running out of the place.
Right. when does it become stealing, and when is it just you being weird in a grocery store?
I think the moment the meat goes in your pants.
Is that the moment it passes past the waistline and it's like, oh yeah, that's weird.
I think it's weird then. But it's an interesting point.
Yeah, I mean, technically it's not stealing. Now, here's a really good question. What happens if you just use your pants to carry stuff? Like, what happens if he took the meat and he actually went into the checkout line and he pulled the meat out of his pants and paid for it? See, it's totally fine.
So here's now the situation. Warden acknowledges that he did put the rib roast down his pants and that he had no money to originally pay for it.
Right.
But according to the police report, he is adamant that since he did not run out of the store with the meat, he claims he's fully innocent.
I think he has a point, though, right?
Well, unfortunately, though, The Publix had to discard the rib roast due to contamination from the pants.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that part.
Yeah. Warden was charged with misdemeanor theft and booked into the county jail. But Warden has pleaded not guilty. So he is going to fight this.
He's going to stand by his story.
Yeah. He's going to try and fight this in court. It'll be interesting to see if it plays out, but I'm having a feeling it won't.
No. I forgot about, you know, the fact that it was down his pants, so they probably couldn't have put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, it was just in his pants for a few minutes. It's
no
fine.
Big deal.
It didn't touch anything.
It's still good. It's still good.
It's still good. Yeah.
And there you go. That's what I have for you this week in the non-Fortune Cookie Odd News. But before we wrap this episode up, let's go over what have we learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
All right, Mike, what have you learned?
I learned that the moment food passes past your waistband into your pants, that's when it becomes weird.
Yep.
That is the cutoff.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
As soon as it goes in the pants.
Nobody wants pants meat.
No. Well, some people want pants meat, but not all people. The ladies like good pants meat, you know? No?
Yes.
Anyway, 7 pounds of pants meat is too much to try and sneak out of a store with.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Go for a smaller cut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're going to be walking like a tripod or something.
One step, two step, three step. One step, two step. Oh. We also learned that lawnmower racing is a thing.
Yeah.
If you go to letsmow.com. You can see all the glorious facts and information about the Lawnmower Racing Association, and potentially even see a mower sponsored by the Crispy Noodle. We're gonna look into that. We're gonna get in touch with our people, get our people to get in touch with their people.
Best we can do is $5 for our marketing budget.
Hey, you know what? I think that's more than enough to get our logo on on a premier racing mower. That apparently can go up to 85 miles an hour.
That seems a little unsafe.
That seems excessive.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to cut their grass that fast. All right? Yeah. We also learned that you have to always have gravy on hand when you're getting ready to watch porn.
Yes, of course.
Got to dip the nuts in it.
Yeah.
Nice and warm. Keep mm-hmm. them warm, you know?
Yep.
You know, they're just out there, you know, in the open air. It gets chilly.
Yeah, you got to protect them.
Put them in the gravy.
You got to caress them in the gravy.
Caress them in the gravy. That's highly disturbing.
Yes. Just a little bit.
Are you using, like, massage oil? You're, like, rubbing the gravy? Like, oh. That's awful. I also learned that I probably love Disney too much, but Rich probably doesn't love Disney enough.
I think that's probably a good assessment.
I feel like that's probably what is going on here.
But screw Disney.
But also, yay Disney.
All right, and there you go. That's all we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Yes, sir.
I'm if I know what we did.
Oh, man. And there you go, folks. Another interesting episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast in the books. Thank you for tuning in and supporting us. We appreciate all of all the support that we've been getting. You know, we didn't actually make a clear announcement on this, but you can find us now on Spotify. That's been our big development recently here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. So whether or not you've been listening on our website or on Google Podcasts or a new way to listen on Spotify, or if you're an OG and still been listening to us on iTunes Podcast, thank you for all the support. If you want to check out more and learn more about us, check out the website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure to like us on Facebook, The Crispy Noodle. Follow us on Twitter, at The Crispy Noodle. And follow us on Instagram, at The Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can find videos, interviews, best bits, and a whole lot more. But most importantly, remember to subscribe to The Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
Yep. I forgot about Stitcher, too. Yeah, there you go.
We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
I think we've completed the Infinity Gauntlet of where you can find us. I can't think
of... Yeah, we got website, iTunes, Google, Stitcher, and Spotify now.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Listen to us in all five places. You get a free episode downloaded every Thursday, so make sure you search for a download and subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on podcast services around the world.
Yeah. No matter what your podcast app of choice is, you should be able to find us and subscribe so that you get a new episode every Thursday morning. That will enlighten you on sports, entertainment, and odd news. If you want to get into contact with us individually, I am on Twitter at Rich Liebig, RichLieBig.
I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo. Make sure you hit us up with sports, entertainment, and odd news stories, and we'll be sure to take it under advisement.
Yep, or let us know. What side of the fence are we on? Am I hating on Disney too much, or is Mike loving Disney too much? So let us know your thoughts on that. But unfortunately, this one is coming to an end. This is the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the Crispy Noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That's going to do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Later!
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
Hello, it is I, your good friend and former President Barack Obama. It's been a while. I'm joined by the leader of the ghost clergy, Cardinal Copia.
How you doing, United States of America?
No, well, I'm well, but now you may be asking yourself,
why are we here?
Well, it's 2019 and nothing makes sense anymore. But anyway, in my retirement and during his infernal time away from the clergy, we've both been listening to a few podcasts.
Ones that will make the asses wobble.
Yes, those are good ones, but we also need ones that bring us hope and change. One in particular with sports, entertainment, and odd news.
You give them a listen and a clappity-clap, yes?
Yes, a round of applause for our favorite podcast.
The Crispy Noodle Podcast 2019!
Oh.